Welcome to another episode of the Lisa Ann Experience, now part of the SiriusXM Podcast Network, which is so exciting. The app has been completely revamped. There's a podcast button that Chris, I touched on it and realized, holy moly, I could save so much space in my phone with other apps because so many good podcasts are on there. I mean, endless podcasts. So everyone, please make sure you check it out. And don't forget, SiriusXM now has free listening. No credit card required to download the app through December 1st. This is a great time for you to fall in love and see the just simplicity of everything that's there for you, how you can get your favorite sports shows on demand. You are no longer stuck by the clock. Speaking of the clock, I went into my jewelry drawer the other day and realized every single one of my watch batteries is dead. And think about it. We haven't worn watches. They all died at the same time. Well, it's been, what, almost a year since I put on a watch. Why would I need to know what time it is? I'm home.
That's a good point. I've worn one a couple of times, but that's about it.
And I wear it kind of more fashion, right? You wear it to go out somewhere. I haven't really gone out anywhere where I wore a watch.
We got our engagement photos taken about a month ago. So I wore it then because that's an occasion that you can wear it. And we made sure to stay socially distant while we were doing that. So we're being very safe.
Very good. So check it out. The SiriusXM free listening. I've been posting it on my timelines at The Real Lisa Ann. Real easy for you to click on the link and sign up. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review my podcast. Many exciting things happened since this last episode. First and foremost, on occasion, I know I should do it more, so I'll apologize in advance. I write a blog. My blog is at therealisaann.com, and this blog post was about the dentist. So I'd been in a bit of New York denial. I figured I would always see my LA dentist because it's so easy to fly back and forth and see my friends. But you know what? That's not as easy as it once was. And I love my dentist in LA. And if you find a dentist you love, you'll go all the time. Like I go 4 times a year to get my teeth cleaned. I like going to the dentist. I like just, you know, checking in. Then you don't wait as long. You don't procrastinate flossing or any important things. And so my dentist in LA went to college. His college roommate has a practice in Manhattan. So I was like, okay. He mentioned to me when I was moving here that if I ever had an emergency, he'd link me to his best friend who has a practice here and I could go to him. So finally, I made my appointment. And last week, I went and I met my new dentist who is so much like my dentist in LA. I felt so comfortable right away. Same personality. We talked about the Dodgers, like everything was the same, which was awesome. But when I got there, you know, it's new. You're in New York. There's construction everywhere. Sometimes you can't see the street. Sometimes you can't see the unit. So I go over and there's a bunch of construction going on. This guy shows me to go around the back way and I go up this elevator. I get my teeth cleaned. I get my exam. No cavities. Everything's good. Okay, fine. I go down in the elevator, completely forget about the construction going on out front. I see the light where the door is. I go to the door. Now, mind you, there's no signs. The door is open. I open the door to walk out from the dentist and I step in wet concrete. Now, not only did I step in wet concrete, but the construction workers, like 30 of them, start yelling and cussing at me, right? So New York, right? You know, just cussing at me. So I step back in the doorframe and I start cussing at them back.
Good.
Like, what the fuck? Where was the sign? Why is this door not locked? And as I'm cussing them out, I turn around. There's 3 guys that work in the building that are like on the ground laughing their ass off because of the whole thing. And they're like, you know, we've been telling those guys to put cones out by the door. Fuck them. Fuck them. So they gave me the instructions on how to get the concrete off. I was like, I sank in the concrete. Thank gosh, I'm light, but I sank in the concrete. So now I'm walking home from the dentist, stomping concrete off of my feet to try and get as much clumps off so that I could wipe it off when I got home. But that was kind of a bit of a highlight. And so, you know, my dentist asked me like the same question my other dentist asked me, do you have a water pick? I have a water pick, but I have to tell you, the first couple times I tried to use it, I texted my friends who had been recommending a water pick. And I said, do you need a raincoat to like use a water pick? Like, why does water get all over me? Like, how do I do this better? Well, I took this week and I have now mastered and truly enjoy the water pick. So there's a highlight from my dental extravaganza, the story that never ends. Concrete. I left my mark, right? I left my mark. I'm sure they smoothed it, but I left my mark outside my new dentist to celebrate how excited I was. And really, this is kind of a reminder to everybody. I think we've put off a lot of our doctor's appointments, a lot of our dental appointments. This has been a year where nobody's wanted to really go and do those things, but it's still really important, that kind of like self-care, that kind of like checking in and making sure you're healthy. So please, everyone, don't be afraid. And don't be afraid of the dentist. Find a dentist you really like, and it'll be a lot easier. Also, after the dentist, the no raincoat with the water pick success, I've got a lot of feedback from the last podcast about me discussing my boyfriend. I've also gotten a ton of feedback saying that I broke a lot of hearts, which truly leads me to believe that too many people actually really felt they had a chance.
And now, Chris, they think the thing that's now stopping them from being with you is the fact that you've got a boyfriend. That's the only reason now.
That is the only reason.
Interesting.
And when I say a lot of responses, I mean a lot of responses. Like, you broke my heart. And I'm like,
people have a line now. At least we know where the line is. And now we've discovered the line. That's something. I think that's progress, to be honest with you.
I guess it's progress, but like, I wrote back to a bunch of people like, don't you want me to be happy? And they're like, well, that means I'm unhappy. And I write back like, well, you've been unhappy then for the last like 20 plus years we've been interacting since MySpace, because I never went out with any of you. So there's that. So I would like to send my condolences to every single person that feels that I have slighted them. And this is a personal attack. It's not about you. It's about me. On the other hand, Saturday night, movie night, I take a little break. Saturdays, I listen to fantasy sports radio all afternoon. I start to really tinker with my lineups. I see who got dropped. You know, you do all that. And then my rule is Saturday night by 9 o'clock, I have to stop working. I'll watch a movie. So I decided to watch a movie from 2011 that I loved the first a million times I've watched it. And I knew that this would have a greater impact. And that's the movie New Year's Eve. Have you ever seen it, Chris?
No, that's the chick flick one, yeah.
I don't think I've seen that one. Down like that.
No.
It's not just a chick flick. It's an exciting New Year's Eve. It's got a great cast.
I'm just confirming that's the one I'm thinking of. I've seen it. I saw the trailer for it when it came out. I don't think I ever actually got around to watching it.
When Ashton Kutcher and Zac Efron are in a movie together, it automatically is a chick flick. And then you add in Hilary Swank and Sarah Jessica Parker, Katherine Hagel, and Bon Jovi is in this movie. But here's what's interesting is it was such a trip to watch it. I lived in Times Square twice. My first stint in that building was a little over 3 years, and then I just lived there for a year. And last New Year's Eve, my friend Logan came to stay with me. He had never seen New Year's Eve. It's so cool when you live there because you get a wristband and you're allowed to like walk the streets, even though the cops have all the streets blocked off. You show them your paperwork and your wristband, and while everyone else is waiting around, and you're walking on the sidewalks like a free bird. And in my building, they use all the buildings in Times Square for snipers. So in the afternoon, the snipers start to arrive. And then at 10 o'clock, the rooftop is closed. The atrium outside is closed because the snipers are all perched up. But they start to come during the day. So we had stopped and picked up lunch. And we went outside and there were just guns laying everywhere. And Logan was like, what the fuck? And I'm like, well, how do you think they monitor these millions of people that come to Times Square? There's a million snipers. We could see it from my window. And when you look out, when you're on a higher floor, you look out, all you see are just cops, SWAT, and snipers. So I remember every level of New Year's Eve, how they keep it safe. And then one of the things I loved was once it was over, how quickly they cleaned up all the confetti and all the garbage and everything else. But watching this became super emotional because it hit me that there would be no Times Square New Year's Eve this year and how different it is. So I think everybody could go back and watch that movie New Year's Eve and kind of relive that experience. Remember that we're going to have that experience again. But it was just, it really hit me. And I watched that movie thinking like, wow, I've seen so much of that firsthand because I was fortunate to live in Times Square twice. And most people don't really know what that's like.
Absolutely. Now, I think you and I have different ideas about what makes a good New Year's Eve. That to me sounds incredibly frightening. Even before I knew about the snipers, by the way, I didn't know about those. It makes sense. But the fact that you're in this area with thousands and thousands and thousands of other people, and most people go the entire day without like going to the bathroom, right? They can't go to the bathroom because once you leave, you can't come back in.
They do have some porta potties set up and they wristband everybody. So if you're in a certain area, but yeah, most people do wear diapers and people start lining up there at 10 o'clock, 9, 10 o'clock in the morning.
It's
much more organized than it was when I was a younger girl and I went from Pennsylvania. My friends and I came up here. We were like teenagers to do it and we actually had to stand. Now you reserve your spot online so you know what section you're in. That's how the cops keep everything organized, but no alcohol. They search everyone's bags. I mean, it's
that's another
security
reason not to go.
You see more cops New Year's Eve in New York City than you'll ever see in one place in your entire life. And it's just fascinating. But this brings me to a conversation I had with my friend about the movie. And he said to me, Lisa, do you remember Y2K? Remember when the world was going from 1999 to 2000? Chris, you may not realize this, but there were people in America that were like building these like panic rooms and like stocking up toilet paper and water because they didn't think digitally we could make the move to the year 2000. To think that at one time, Y2K was our biggest issue. And now here we are. And that brings me to my big issues, which is sports betting. There is nothing more stressful than picking games. And by the way, thank you, Tennessee Titans, for winning in overtime because it was one of the wins that I picked. And I was getting beat up on social media over picking the Titans over the Ravens. I'm watching that game end. I'm like, oh no, oh no. And there goes Derrick Henry and just into the end zone. And I'm like, yes, there's a pick that made it. But somebody that always makes his picks and gets it right is my friend, Black Jack Fletcher, who's going to be joined right here. You can follow him on Twitter at Blackjack Burner and on Instagram at Blackjack Fletcher. Blackjack, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm fantastic, Lisa, and thank you. It's always a pleasure to get to talk with you again.
Always a pleasure to get to talk with you. And Blackjack, one of the things I find fascinating about you is there's so many things that people do not know. So I'd like to go back before this world of sports and discuss your initial walk through life, which to me blew my mind when I found out the amount of years you went to college and what your first gig in the real world was.
Yeah, I'm kind of like an onion, Lisa. I have a lot of layers, you know. And so I went to college at American University in D.C. Then I went to law school, became a lawyer. I was a prosecutor down in Florida. And then I became a criminal defense attorney, and I did that for 8 years before getting into this line of work, which I affectionately refer to as being an idiot on the internet.
Okay, so how many years of college did all of that take?
7 years of higher education. Money very well spent, as you can tell.
And I know from you, from getting to have some amazing individual conversations, what was it for you that made you stay with the law? And then what was it that made you say, whoa, this is not, even though I put in 7 years and spent a ton of money on college, this is not what I want to do forever. I mean, that had to be a tough time.
Yeah. I mean, listen, the money was good, right? I mean, I had my own practice for a while and the money was good. But at the end of the day, I was spending half of my time as a bill collector and the other half of my time dealing with some people who were, you know, not the greatest quality.
Of course.
And that's not to say, you know, you're run of the mill person who's accused of a crime. But, you know, there are some people accused of some crimes that really – It kind of turns your stomach a little bit and jades you to a degree that, you know, I sat back and looked at it at, you know, whatever I was, 31, 32, and just said, yeah, I don't know that I can do this for another 30 years.
That was a really smart decision because I imagine when you are exposing yourself, like you said, you clarified, not everybody that committed a crime is a horrible person, but you do have to go into the trenches. And I'm sure once you expose yourself, you eventually have to numb yourself to accepting almost rubbing elbows with people that you would never want to rub elbows with.
Yeah, I mean, it's more than that. You have to stand up and be their advocate. You know, you have to argue for that person's interest, which, you know, like I said, listen, people, drug crimes, you know, petty theft, whatever. Who cares? But when you're talking about, you know, particularly the crimes against children,
yeah,
that stuff kind of, that's the stuff that makes you pour an extra drink at the end of the night.
And there's defense attorneys that have to do it. And they do it on a daily basis. And how do they sleep at night is something that I've always wondered. Did it affect you kind of in your vibe and in your spirit where you ever went home from dealing with the paperwork of understanding what you were going to be facing and saying and doing in court, and it left you just feeling so uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I went through a divorce at the towards the end of my time practicing law. I don't think my career helped that situation at all. I don't think it was a good thing for the marriage I was in. But you know, at the end of the day, yeah, it's tough sometimes. It's hard sometimes to sit there and look at what some people did. You know, listen, our criminal justice system is, I think, the best in the world. It has its flaws for sure. But I think it's, you know, the system itself is a template for other countries. But, you know, you can sit there and, you know, we presume everyone innocent until proven guilty. But sometimes you just, you know, you walk in there, you've seen it enough times, you get a feel off someone. And it's not pleasant sitting there trying to come up with, all right, well, how am I going to spin this for them?
You know, right. Yeah, how am I going to convince if there's a jury? How am I going to sell this? You're selling something. You are definitely
that's what it is. Sales job.
So yeah. At what point did you decide I can't? And how hard was it to leave a practice, change gears? And then did you know what your next step was going to be?
I had no earthly idea what I was going to do. But you know, I had a guy who just, you know, I had a client, and I, you know, have to be careful what I say, but he was accused of sexually assaulting his 18 year old stepson, who had come from another country. And we went and did depositions in another state, because that's where the victim had moved to. And the charges wound up getting dropped. I mean, you know, that's, we did our job, right? Like, we got the best possible result for our client. And I remember sitting in a bar with my partner at the time, and the two of us looking at each other like, what the fuck did we just do? Mm-hmm. Like, what did we just do?
I mean, you did your job, but there are jobs in this world that to do them properly can hurt other people. And can, like, hurt you for feeling a level of guilt.
I will never Google that client's name, because I would be terrified to see if it happened again. Because if it did, you would feel an immense amount of responsibility. So I literally rented a car and drove around three or four states for like a week and a half, and just decided.
Just thinking?
Just decided, you know what? I'm done with this. And literally I came back and I started to wind the practice down, and I had no idea what I was going to do. I just kind of took the Steve Harvey approach and just jumped without a net. So it worked.
And how old were you then?
31, 32, something like that.
Okay. So now you're 31 years old. You have to accept the fact that you spent an awful amount of time on your ass studying.
Money, Lisa, the money.
Really? So were you still carrying student debt at that time?
Yeah, at that point, yeah.
So this is where people can't make the choice that you made. Right? Because they're hemming and hawing over the money and they're afraid to try something new. And now you've decided, okay, this is not for me. Where do you go next, Blackjack?
Well, I went to the airport in Miami. And I was actually getting on a flight to come back to New York. And I saw that someone at Barstool Sports had put out a tweet that said they were looking for a gambling intern. Now, I have always enjoyed gambling. I didn't do it every day.
Okay.
I enjoyed it. And so I said, screw it. I'll send an email. I got nothing going on right now. And I sent like a really over the top email to them. And they got back to me and said, yeah, we might need you. Come on in. We're going to do like this competition. And I went in and I just decided if I was going to go in, I was going to go in, you know.
Ready.
I was going all in.
Right.
So that's kind of how that started. And it just snowballed from there.
And from your bit of gambling that you did previously mm-hmm. to now, what were your favorite sports to bet on when you first started this journey?
My favorite thing to bet on has always been horse racing.
That's what I thought.
I guess it's a personal thing for me. That's how I learned to gamble. Hockey's probably my favorite thing.
Really?
Sport to bet on. I love betting hockey.
Why is that? Because you enjoy watching it the most?
I love hockey. I love watching hockey, but I also think there's an edge to it. I think because not as many people will bet on hockey.
Makes sense.
That if you spend time with it, you can find more of an edge than you will on Steelers Ravens.
Sure. Of course. So you're 31, you take an internship. And you're starting over. You're like taking an internship with student debt as a lawyer, which is just mind blowing to me. And when I first heard your story, and by the way, a casualty of COVID, that awesome lounge in Times Square where we sat outside and had a cocktail is not reopening. That whole hotel is not reopening.
That's a shame.
I know. It's a beautiful spot. And, you know, for a long time, I would look over from a rooftop to make sure they were still watering all the plants. So, you know, during COVID, I was like on plant alert. Like, is somebody taking care of those plants? But that's here nor there. So you go from being an intern at Barstool, and then our paths crossed at Fantasy Sports Radio as you were handling everything that has to do with sports betting for the Action Network.
Yes. Barstool, at the time, the Supreme Court decision on gambling hadn't come down yet.
Okay.
So Barstool, I remember I met with Dave Portnoy. It was January 11th of 2018. And he said to me, you know, yeah, we all really like you, but, you know, I don't know what I could do with a full-time gambling person. So Chad Millman at the Action Network comes along, makes me an offer, and I go there. And that's where I met Paul LaDuca and Jeff Schwartz and all these great people. And, yeah, eventually Chad told us they had done a deal with SiriusXM, and we were going to do a show on the radio. And the way Chad phrased it, I love Chad, but he's a slippery fish sometimes. He says to me, do you want to host a national sports gambling show? I'm like, absolutely.
Okay. Good sell.
When's it going to start? We'll let you know. We don't know yet. All right. He lets me know the Thursday before the first Monday that the show is going to start. He neglects to tell me that it is on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Now, I play fantasy sports, but it is certainly not what I was preparing to do. And I was doing the show with Paul LaDuca. And Paul is much more of a gambler than he is a fantasy player.
Right.
So we're prepared to talk about, you know, I think the NBA playoffs were starting. You know, we're looking at like series prices, all this. Now we're like, oh, I guess we should learn how to play basketball and DraftKings because I haven't done it. But it worked. I mean, we got there. It took us a little while, but we had a good run there.
Well, you know, I got into fantasy the same way. I mean, I was doing a show for Playboy Radio in Los Angeles, and I was talking too much sports, and I was told, oh, Matt Deutsch had this fantasy sports show with his Playboy Playmates, and it broke up. You know, yeah, you want to talk sports on the air. It's kind of the same thing. I go to meet Matt Deutsch. He's like, have you ever played fantasy sports? I'm like, no, never. But I had the summer to learn, and you starting your betting love with picking horses, you teaching me when you came to visit me in LA, we watched a game. It was the first Thursday night game of the season last year, 2 years ago before I moved. And you said it's all about the math. And it's very similar in fantasy sports. It's all about the math. I mean, yes, you can analyze other factors, the field, the dome, the weather, the injuries, all these things. But fantasy sports betting is really about math.
Yeah, it is. I mean, so many people, you know, will look at it and it's, you know, the equation that they'll put in their head is, you know, well, they'll look at the Bills and the Seahawks. And the first thing that comes to your head is, oh, well, you know, the Seahawks are better than Buffalo. And it's like that institutional memory kind of kicks in, right?
Right.
It's like what you're looking at isn't whether they're, you know, a better team or not. It's that you've got a home team with a better defense that's getting 3 in this game, right?
Right.
So like you don't need the better team here. You just need Buffalo not to shit the bed. Like,
right.
That's really what it boils down to. Because they can be down by 10 in the fourth quarter and still cover this game.
Right.
So, like, the numbers get very important in gambling. You know, if you gamble on a regular basis, you'll get real good at doing basic math. It'll just come to you. I was never a math person. You know, not very good at it. That's why I became a lawyer, I think. But I can get your math up to 100 pretty good.
And, you know, when you look at how many more states we're evolving, it just should be the entire U.S. But there's bizarre things like, you know, when you're in Nevada, you can't set a DFS lineup.
Yeah.
So like, would I be setting lineups and be going to Vegas for something? I would have to set up my lineup with a dummy lineup in California. I could adjust the lineup in Vegas, but I couldn't add in any new entries.
The laws in this country make zero sense to me. You know, there's gambling in every state in this country, right?
Yes.
Like there are states that say We don't have gambling. Bullshit. You have a lottery. That's gambling. Okay. You authorize bingo games at the church. That's gambling.
Yes.
Like, we have gambling in every state here. All right. You've got a state like Texas, which I love, but you know, Sam Houston Race Park down there. It's a great racetrack down in Houston. You can go there and bet the horses in person, but I can't bet them on my phone. I can only bet them at a racetrack in Texas.
That's bizarre.
Make no sense whatsoever. New York legalized sports betting technically at 5 upstate casinos. Why the hell can't I bet it on my phone?
It's so bizarre to me too. When you look at, like, I can take a train, one exit out of the city, which, by the way, that exit makes me laugh because it's all advertised. It's just
That's what I used to do. Gambling.
And I, as long as I'm on my phone, I can go on this train, get off this stop, place all my bets, and then come home. It just seems just so arbitrary.
I would just go to Hoboken, make my bets, and get back on the train.
Now, if you were to meet someone that has never even dove into, other than maybe a Super Bowl pool or picking squares or maybe bingo or maybe the lottery, what are your first steps that you tell someone to understanding basics of sports betting?
I guess the first thing I usually tell people is pick one thing and really kind of dive into it, right? Like, don't try to be an expert in everything because that's not realistic, right? And don't even say, well, I'm going to bet, you know, just the NFL, because that's a huge scope, right? Like, nobody can sit there and watch 16 games every week, like, right, from start to finish. Nobody does.
No, you can't. You can red zone it. You can, right, go back and watch certain stuff, but you're not going to see the important plays that are going to help you with your formula for the following week.
Pick one team, maybe one division, and really kind of hone in on that,
okay,
right? It's easiest, I think, in college basketball because they play a couple of times a week and you get games more frequently. I've found in those instances, pick the small conferences. Don't bet the ACC. Don't bet Duke and UNC and all that. Go bet the Horizon League. You know, go bet UIC. Go bet, you know, Wright State. Find those teams because that's where there's not as much action on the games and the lines don't move as much. So it's a little bit more static. You know, it doesn't require as much focus initially. So that's usually what I tell people is find something small and hone in on it. Make it your own. Be good.
And once they find that small step, how do you advise people on spending their money? I know for me, I tell people don't gamble money you need.
Listen, I will say this, that, you know, to anyone who ever talks about gambling, you are in charge of your money. I will never tell you how much to bet. I will never tell you, you know, like that's why I get into these arguments with people on Twitter sometimes about, oh, well, you don't put units on there. I don't put units on it because I'm not going to tell you how to bet your money, right? Like,
right, okay,
I'm not sitting here and saying, well, this is a 5-unit play. This is a 2-unit play. I'm just giving you what I'm playing. If you like it, take it. If you don't, don't. But the money at the end of the day, you should not bet money that you don't have. You shouldn't bet your rent money or anything else like that. You should go into gambling expecting to lose. Okay, that should be your expectation when you walk in, is when you punch that bet, that money's gone and it's not coming back. If it does, great. I gamble, Lisa, because I enjoy it. I enjoy having the skin in the game. I like it, but I don't do it to be profitable. I mean, right, I think I am fairly profitable at it, but if I were depending on gambling as my sole source of income, I wouldn't have much of an income. And I think most people would be that way. And, you know, the unfortunate thing about this industry is there's a lot of bullshit artists. There are. There's a lot of people that want to sit there and say, oh, I've made hundreds of thousands of dollars. Oh, okay, fine. Good for you, man. I don't really believe it.
My first experience with betting was my aunts would take the bus to Atlantic City for bingo. Okay, I'm from Easton, Pennsylvania. They take the bus. The only time I would hear from my aunts about their trip was when they won. But as a young girl, I was smart enough to go, okay, once this month she told me she won like $500, which means three times this month, because they went every weekend. Uh-huh. I mean, they went down there and they smoked and drank and played bingo and gambled at the slots. They just loved Atlantic City. And so I was smart enough to go, well, there's an investment here, right? This is what they like to do with their free time. This is where they're meeting their other friends from other places. This is a hangout. Like, this is them getting out of the house. You know, these were housewives. This was all they got to do. One day a week, they got to go to Atlantic City. But I was smart enough to understand. And also, you know, one of my aunts sat me down one day and she said, this is my fun budget. This is what I take to Atlantic City with me. If I come back with it, great. If I don't, great. I'm looking at this is my entertainment. And I think many people want to make money. Too many people want to, even in DFS, like I send out a free tournament every week. I like to play. Sometimes I'll throw it into a cash game. Sometimes I'll be too busy and I'll forget. And then I'll do really well that week. Like I landed in second place and out of 200 did put in a cash game. I hate myself. Yeah. But it's because I'm not always geared towards that profit margin. Right. It's because I'm enjoying the activity of being in with two other people and trying to set a unique and good lineup. I mean, it's a passion. And I think DFS is kind of a good kind of warm up to sports betting because you can really get your rhythm. You can really, you know, get going. Are there any sports that you lean back from? Do you bet golf?
Nope. I don't bet golf. I hate golf with the fire of 1,000 suns. It's more of a personal thing. My ex-wife, when we were married, we used to spend all the holidays at her father's house, and her father was a big golf player. And anytime we would go there, like you go on Thanksgiving, most people watch football. Not there. The rerun of the Phoenix Open from 2014 is on. We go on Christmas. Are you watching basketball, something like that? Maybe a Christmas movie? Nope. The ladies, you know, the ladies China Open is on from 2012. It was just golf 24/7. And now I fucking hate golf.
It's a sport I won't bet. It's a sport, though, that I will admit to you, I love watching. And by the way, I actually...
I like to watch it, too, if I need it now.
You like to... Oh, no. I actually assembled a TV stand for my 65-inch TV so I could put it on wheels. So this weekend, I could roll it out to my living room and I could watch NFL and golf at the same time. That's how much I love golf. And I love golf on my big screen because my other TV is huge and it just makes me feel like I'm there. I was supposed to go to the Masters this year. I love watching it. But to me, it is way too unpredictable to put money on. And like the Masters, like everybody's going in. I like to listen to VSiN. I listen to VSiN a lot. Sirius, you know, the Vegas Sports and Information Network. Mm-hmm. And everyone is talking about, you know, the history of this event and the history of these golfers. But what nobody's really thinking about is the Masters at this time of the year, the blades of grass, the temperature, the moisture, the everything about that course is dramatically different. You cannot look at it the same. And when I'm hearing the history of the Masters, I'm like, you have to asterisk this completely. This is like a whole new rodeo.
Lisa, there's an asterisk on the entire goddamn year. I mean, I don't know. It is what it is. Again, I could never attend the Masters because they don't let you bring a cell phone in. Like, I'm not going 12 hours without my phone. This is 2020. Give me a break.
What about your Apple Watch? Can you take the Apple Watch in? Then you can be texting from your Apple Watch?
Probably not. Like, I'm not doing that. Get in this century, Augusta.
See, that's one thing I do love, the rigid rules of golf. We share a story. My ex-husband's father, who we spent all of our holidays with, lived on a golf course. So we were on the golf course every single holiday as well. We didn't have to watch reruns. We did get to watch football. But it's still, I would love to learn to play. It's something I want to do later in life. But back to sports betting. So you talk about narrowing down your focus as such a big, you love horse racing, which is why you favor and you love to go and you understand it and you were raised with it. When you're advising people, you also probably advise them to stick with something they love, they know, the sport they follow the most.
Yeah. I mean, listen, if you're just, it would be, you know, like I don't love baseball, right? Like baseball to me, I like going to baseball games. I like watching it in person. Watching it on television is a form of torture. So when I bet baseball games, I literally will almost exclusively bet first five inning plays because I can watch five innings.
Okay.
I can get through five.
Okay.
You know, and that to me isn't the end of the world. But when you start getting into the sixth, seventh, eighth inning and you've got three pitching changes in an inning and it's like, it's not for me. So if my attention span's not there, I'm probably not going to be very good at it. So you put your energy with something that you enjoy doing. So you spend more time doing it and thus...
Of course. And with football, you know, with all sports this year, we've had the unusual panic, you know, with the COVID list, with this. But, you know, from day one, I said to everyone, like, even if someone has it, I do believe that maybe one person will be plucked out of the team, like when Cam was out for that week or two. But this show will go on. This is the NFL. They're going to force. So just become numb to the noise, because it's noise. I mean, last weekend, I was answering a million questions on Matthew Stafford. I'm like, guys, it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. By Saturday, he's going to be off the COVID list. Trust me. Do not drop Matthew Stafford in your fantasy league. But so I think this year, it's been even harder for sports bettors because they are getting consumed by so much chatter. Where can everyone get more direct information? I know your social media, and you engage a lot. You're on Twitter at Blackjack Burner. You engage a lot. Yeah. Where do you get your information without the noise?
I mean, I think you have to kind of cull it from a few different sources, right? Like, something that I've always told people, that I've said this for a few years now, is I don't spend as much time on like ESPN or Sports Illustrated or Fox. I like to look at the local news sources. So if I'm looking at a Steelers game, I want to look at the Pittsburgh Gazette.
Yeah, it is the Gazette. Yeah. If you're going to Cleveland, it's the Plain Dealer, by the way. I love the name of that newspaper. When I used to be on the road and the Plain Dealer would be outside my door, I'm like, man, I wish this was really a dealer, not a newspaper. You know,
so like, the ones that like I will look at, because those are the guys who are with the team every day. Right?
Right.
Like, they're there every day. So they're going to have a better feel for what's going on in that locker room injury-wise. They just have more information. And a lot of times people just don't look there. They just go to ESPN and click on the team page. And it's like, all right, fine. Like, they've got stuff. I'm not saying they don't. But I'd rather read about the guy who's there every single day.
Yeah, beat reporters can cover it. When you find your, like, let's say, two favorite in every market, you know, we're all reading John McClain in Houston. We've been reading John McClain for years, you know, and you see his tweet come up, which makes it so much easier. You click on the link, you're at his article, you're done. I'm the same. And my friends always say, like, what are you listening to? I'm like, well, I choose, you know, VSiN or reading on the internet over fluff. I consider, like, I love ESPN as like a pacifier when I'm doing some computer work.
That's it.
But it's a lot of fluff, because you're getting some good heartfelt interviews, players doing things like, look, I made sure I listened to the Tiger Woods interview live yesterday on air because I knew it was going to be incredibly moving, and I knew it was going to be getting so uber hyped for the Masters. But beat reporters and finding them, and you can find them too. You know, the Fantasy Channel has a lot of great guests that have come on that I now follow them. And I'm like, okay, this is my source, JP Finland, DC. Like, you know, you get your source. So you end up only looking at about 12 things to make your decisions instead of trying to listen or read for 3 to 4 hours.
Yeah, I will say one thing about golf. I don't bet golf. I don't watch golf. I don't play golf. I will play DFS in golf. I know nothing about it. I just text Jason Sobel and ask him what to do. Jason Sobel is the most knowledgeable human being I've ever met about the sport of golf. He's also just a great guy. He works at the Action Network. All of his golf stuff is up there, including his DFS stuff. I'll tell you, I've probably won as much of golf as anything else on DFS. Like, it's not bad. I just don't watch it. I just wait until Sunday and check it.
And that's because the margins are smaller, of course, of people playing, right? Not as many people are playing DFS lineups in golf.
Yeah. So, I mean, Jason puts all his stuff up, so it's not like it's exclusive. I just, you know.
Right. No. And he loves golf, so it goes that way.
That's his thing, man.
How about NASCAR? Do you ever bet on the races?
No. Listen, I mean, horse racing is watching horses make left turns, but they're doing it for a minute and a half, right? I don't need to watch it. I don't get it. Listen, I know there's a ton of people that love NASCAR. I know. Watching cars make left turns for 4 hours seems crazy to me. Crazy.
It's pretty barbaric. I mean, I remember, you know, growing up, we used to go to Pocono Speedway a lot. And I just remember it was just so loud. And you know, as a kid, it just kind of gets monotonous. You're like, okay, we're waiting for a crash. You're actually waiting for a crash because that's going to be exciting. Or you're watching the pit crew, which I always found fascinating, was watching the pit crew. But like, I'm not going to bet on racing. I've gotten the opportunity to go to the Kentucky Derby once. Mm-hmm. It is by far the most incredible sporting event I've ever attended. I mean, to me, it tops the Super Bowl. What do you say about the Derby?
I mean, I think that horse racing has a way of pulling off big events better than any other sport. They make it very glamorous. They make it, you know, it's an environment that if you're not a football fan, you might not enjoy going to the Super Bowl, right?
Right.
It's something that you just may not love. I can take anyone to a horse race and they can have a decent time.
I agree.
You can sit outside, the animals are beautiful. You can bet a couple of bucks, literally, and have a day. And most people will enjoy it. I don't know if they've ever been to a racetrack with anyone who doesn't enjoy it. And the Kentucky Derby is you know, it's the biggest day in racing by far. You know, although I would say the Breeders' Cup is probably – the Breeders' Cup is a fantastic weekend.
I have to do that.
2021, it's in Del Mar.
That's
going to be – I definitely want to get out there for that. But, yeah, it's – horse racing does those big events better than anybody.
I will say my biggest takeaway from the Kentucky Derby was, you know, I had great access because I was with friends who had some horses in the Derby. So we were able to go down with the horses and walk them out, and we had all this lounge access. And I, you know, coming from California and seeing celebrities, and I said to my friends, like, these people right here have money that generations can't spend. Like, if these people had Kardashian money, which the rest of us think is an ungodly amount of money, if these people had it, they would jump off a bridge, because their level of rich is rich that I've never seen in my life.
You've got to go to the farms in Lexington. Like, I did that a couple of years ago, went and took a tour of the big farms in Lexington, like Claiborne and Spendthrift and Coolmore. And they are, I mean, the most gorgeous pieces of land you'll ever see. I mean, they have houses, Lisa, built on these properties that literally are castles. They are literal fucking castles.
I've seen
in Lexington, Kentucky, that people live in, and you look at, you're like, oh, that must be nice.
I mean, there's a fucking white picket fence the whole ride into the airport in Lexington.
Yeah,
I mean, it looks like you're pulling into somebody's, you know, 50-acre farm. It's just this beautifully, not one chip on the white paint, perfect fence. Yeah. Like, you're like, this is the airport? Where, by the way, it's like $8 to park overnight there. I always know weird things when I travel. Like, I look at how much is parking here. It's $40 a night in LA. Oh, it's $8 here. You know, those things.
I did appreciate, though, that the bar in the airport in Lexington was open at like 6 a.m. serving drinks.
Of course.
A problem in some places.
It is a problem, which is shocking, because it used to not be a problem. You used to be able to get drinks any time of day.
I just have to say this because it's my personal crusade. If I accomplish one thing in this life, I want it to be this. I don't understand why you can't get a drink 24 hours a day in an airport. I don't understand it. It should be international waters. I'm not driving anywhere. Okay. I go to JFK Airport on a Sunday. I can't get a drink until 10 a.m. What is that? What is that? I don't fly dry.
What about Vegas? I don't fly dry. What about Vegas? Can you get a drink 24 hours at the airport in Vegas?
Of course you can. You can do anything you want in Vegas 24 hours.
Right?
It's borderline communist. Like, I don't understand in an airport. There should be no rules in an airport.
Do you know what's even worse? If you're not flying first class or business right now, you can't get alcohol on a plane.
Which, believe me, I have been down that road. I have figured out other means to do that. I smuggle
it on. Of course you do. You put it in a coffee cup from the American Airlines lounge and you take it on the plane. Come on, we've all done this.
But yeah, it's absurd.
It's definitely making me not want to fly coach, because I enjoy a cocktail when I'm flying too. It helps me take that perfect nap. So let's talk about 2020. It's been quite a year. We all know this. How has this year been for you when it comes to the beginning stage of quarantine to kind of where we are now, where I'm not quite sure if we're facing a second wave or if we're just facing people are fed up and they're just doing their own thing?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I when it first started, me and LaDuca were down in Houston promoting the racetrack, Sam Houston, and you know, we have a tendency when we're on trips to extend them. We like being on the road. We enjoy that lifestyle. And so we were sitting there in March and all of a sudden everything just went to shit. And we're like, you know, they start closing things and the president, you know, put the travel ban on from Europe and China. And, you know, at this point, nobody really knew what the hell was going to happen. Like, we're sitting around saying, are they going to shut down the airports? Like, are we not going to be able to get out of Houston? Like, what are we going to do? And so we decided to fly back and, you know, Paul went to Arizona with his brother. I came back to New York and I think we didn't see each other for 5 months after that because of this nonsense. Yeah, I mean, I sat in quarantine, Lisa, literally, like, didn't leave the house except for the supermarket and the liquor store for, I mean, over 3 months. And, like, I don't know. I feel like, what did we accomplish if we're being honest here? I don't know. I don't know. And as far as where we're at now, like I'm not a scientist. I don't pretend to be, but yeah, I think people have just kind of had enough. Listen, I know people are fond of saying, well, look at this country and look at that country. That's not America. We're wired differently here. Okay.
We also have a much larger population.
We do. And I've said this to people before that, you know, and again, I don't get into politics, but if anybody, I'll say that, if anybody tried to impose like another real shutdown, I think people would lose their shit. I really do. Like, I don't think there would be compliance. I think people would lose it because we're not built for this. Like, we're just not built for this.
Yeah, we want to be out doing our things. I mean, let's go to that 3-month span. That 3-month span when you were first home and only going to the grocery store and the liquor store, that was also when we had no sports. Yeah. Luckily, we had The Last Dance. Like, there were some pacifiers. Tiger King came out.
Horse racing.
Oh, you had horse racing.
Horse racing was still running.
Wow. So you weren't able to go in person, right?
No.
But you were able to watch.
We could bet it. We could watch it. That took up most of the afternoons.
That's great.
Tiger King. Wow, you mentioned that. Holy shit. That's a pandemic phenomenon right there.
How many days did it take you to watch it?
Oh, one.
Me too.
One.
I have this thing. One day. I ask people, like, I had friends that are like, oh, I just watched an episode a night for like 4 nights. I'm like, what's fucking wrong with you? How could you turn that off? I didn't even care if it was going to be 11 hours. I was committed. I had to see it through. Okay. I had to.
Yeah.
You know, and it was too quick. I almost wish they didn't give it to us all at once.
I know.
If they would have just spoon feed it to me, I'll wait. I'll be on pins and needles like we were for The Last Dance.
I have blown through so much TV. It's not even funny. I literally would just start watching. I watched Nip Tuck over again. I never watched that show in fucking 15 years. I watched that over again. Like, I got nothing left. I got nothing left in the tank.
Yeah, I'm very, I told myself last night, like, I'm super disappointed in myself because I didn't master another language during quarantine, which I went back to my old quarantine list. I have a notebook of all the things I had hoped to accomplish before the world opened back up again. And quite a few of them got done. But like, why am I not learning another language? Like, today I'm putting an hour in. Don't worry. Today I am putting an hour in. I have it in my planner, an hour every day. Like, I did get busy. I tried not to watch TV during the day. I was a little bit stressed when there was no sports. I'm not going to lie. You had horse racing.
I'll be honest with you. I didn't miss it as much as I thought I would. I really didn't. I don't know. Maybe it's like a Stockholm syndrome thing. I don't know. I didn't miss it as much as I thought I would. Like, when I sat down and thought about it, yeah, it was odd. But I didn't think about it like every day.
See, I did because I don't really know the channels on my television other than sports channels. When I'm in my office working, I'm always watching something sports related. And it's not going to be just like ESPN on repeat, right? It would be like a baseball game during the day or something. So for me, I had to like go into my remote and be like, what are all these channels? I will say I did discover the Learning Channel has the weirdest fucking shows ever, which is really good. Really great, like offbeat. Yeah. Like, those producers get to meet some real, like, I don't know, life after lockup. I'm addicted.
Don't they have like the midgets on there too, or little people?
They do have the little people, yes. Nope. But you have, because you were a lawyer and because you did this and you've had to have these conversations, you gotta watch Life After Lockup, man. These people fall in love with inmates and they put their bond up there's like private rooms where they pay off security people so they can have conjugal visits because they're not married yet. So they're not really allowed to have the conjugal visit. I'm addicted.
I don't know. I haven't seen that. I did watch a lot of true crime documentaries.
I can't. Scares me.
I firmly now believe that Scott Peterson did not kill his wife. Firm believer in that.
Unbelievable.
I believe an owl killed that woman in North Carolina on the staircase. I don't know how we allow birds to live amongst us, really. They're dinosaurs. They're damn dinosaurs. And we allow this. It's bizarre. I watched a lot of those kind of things, too.
Well, the one normal thing we're going to have wrapping up 2020 is we are actually going to have NBA on Christmas Day. How good does it feel?
Yeah, I'm happy that we're going to get the NBA back. I mean, the NBA has kind of led the way in doing this in a smart way. So I think that they'll get it right again. Looks like we'll have hockey back the next month in January. Football obviously will wrap up sometime in February, and baseball, God only knows. I mean, I think baseball's going to have real problems.
Yeah, baseball's going to drag their feet like they did in this situation. Baseball's a different element.
Economically, that sport's going to have problems. I mean, most of it's not like the NFL where it's like, hey, just play the games. The TV contract makes it all go away.
Right, you're right. We don't need fans in this dance. We're good. Yeah, we're still making tons of money.
I mean, with baseball, a lot of teams depend on, game day revenue. And if you don't have it, I don't see how the owners are going to okay a 162-game season because they're not going to be able to pay for it.
And the difference as well is in the NFL, the money being different for the players. Money, contracts not being guaranteed. Yep. You see a contract, and I'm always trying to educate people, like when you look at this $40 million contract, please read it because it might be $4 million guaranteed. Yes. And the rest is in incentives. And if this guy misses one game due to an injury, he is never going to reach his incentives. So he's never going to get another $36
million. Yeah, I mean, at some point, the NFL Players Association has to draw a line on guaranteed contracts. No, I mean, it's absurd to me that they are the only professional sport that does not have guaranteed contracts.
And it's the most violent, other than the UFC, which I started watching during the pandemic. Well, I never was a UFC fan, but I was so obsessed with Fight Island. And, man, bettors come out for UFC. Yeah. I mean, come out. And it's gotten me into it, I'll tell you, because I haven't started to place bets or make picks yet. But what I've been doing is really studying what different countries the fighters come from, what their style is, learning that, who doesn't want to be down on the mat, right? Who knows that you're a better grappler than a wrestler or than a boxer? And boy, I'll tell you, the first couple times, Blackjack, that I heard the word leaking, and didn't know what it meant. That meant there was going to be blood just like sprouting out of somebody's head, leaking. Now I look for leaking. Now I'm like, bring it.
I don't know. I don't know where to go with this.
So violent.
Listen, it's violent. And I guess I like some of the fighters. That guy, Israel Adesanya, is great to watch. When Conor McGregor was doing his thing, that was fun. But some of it, watching two guys and, bicycle shorts roll around on a mat is not really my idea of entertainment.
But it is amazing what they endure. I think what blew me away my first couple weekends watching was they get the shit beat out of them.
Oh, yeah.
And then they go and do their post interview 5 minutes later, and they're like thanking their family, and they're just having this normal conversation. Blood's gushing out of their eye. Everything's starting to really swell up. And I'm like, what the fuck? And
I just worry that sport is one bad fight away from like disappearing. Like, I mean, what happens if somebody dies in that octagon, which I don't think is like a crazy thing to say.
The first time I saw somebody get choked out and pass out and then they bring them back, I thought the guy died. So, of course, I was like standing up like, oh, my God, somebody just died. And then they just shake their legs. And the next thing, the guy's standing up and taking his loss. And I'm like, oh, my God, you were just passed out.
Yeah. Fascinating. I just don't know that you come back from that if that happens. I don't know.
So, Blackjack, you surround the world of sports betting and you love it. It's great to know for my listeners who want to get an edge, especially with the horse track. And also something I didn't know, that no matter what happens in the world, there's still going to be horse racing, which is really good to know. Another reason why hopefully it gained a little bit of an audience when there were no other sports.
You would hope so. But honestly, horse racing has a hard time getting out of its own way. They, as an industry, there's no commissioner. There's no governing body. It's kind of a free-for-all. It's kind of like boxing in some respects. There's not a lot of authority in the sport. So sometimes it's hard to get everyone on the same page. But the sport will continue to run, and it will continue to be able to be wagered on. And listen, the one thing I say is, like, horse racing in terms of betting is great because it's not even money. You're getting odds on it. So, it's a sport where you can go and bet $20 and win $800. That's not like a crazy result at a racetrack. So
it's not. And it's also something that I think if you went in person, you have a different respect and admiration for it right off the bat because you feel that vibe when you're watching. Well, Blackjack, it was such a pleasure having this conversation with you today. Where can everybody learn more about you? I know I gave your Instagram at Blackjack Fletcher, your Twitter at Blackjack Burner. What am I missing?
I mean, listen, those are the main sources right there. I live on Twitter. That's where I do my bread and butter. If you want picks, they're going to be on there every day. You know, we're going to have horse racing stuff. We've got football. Obviously, there's, you know, now that the MAC is back, there's football pretty much every day of the week, which is still something to get used to. You know, but yeah, we a lot of our stuff's on Twitter. LaDuca and I are working on a few interesting projects that we'll have coming out soon. So, yeah, a lot going on.
All right, everybody, give him a follow on Twitter at Blackjack Burner, on Instagram at Blackjack Fletcher. And again, Blackjack, a true pleasure. My friend who went from law school, which blows my mind because school was never my thing. I just wanted out. I was never going to go to college. I was told as a young girl, we didn't have the money for me to go to college. So I knew I wasn't going to go to college. Kind of great because I didn't like studying at all. You put all that ass time in. You were a lawyer. And now here we are walking the same path. We meet doing fantasy sports. We're in a league together. We now share our love for sports betting. So I know that you and I are going to be doing a lot more together. Congratulations on all of your success and your incredibly interesting journey.
Thank you, Lisa. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. The Ask Lisa Ann segment of the Lisa Ann Experience. You know, you can be a part of this at AskLisaAnn@gmail.com. I really feel like I should be pulling some of these from my Facebook since I've realized that like 90% of my Facebook is truly confused about our rapport. I posted a cooking video the other day. I got no cooking comments. I got, we're married. You're my wife. When are we getting married? I love you. Very strange. Culmination of very odd people. If anyone ever wanted to open a club for only creepers, I truly think you could build a successful database from TRLA Official on Facebook. But here we go. I've got my friends from the Talking Shop podcast and also my lovely neighbors in the trailer park at The Real Gimmicks. You can follow on Instagram and Twitter at The Real Gimmicks. I am joined by Doc Gallows and Rocky Romero to take it away today for the mailbag segment of the Lisa Ann Experience. Now, guys, these questions are a cesspool of the male genre that I totally do not want to meet, okay? These are the dudes. Good question. I save like a good question, like, do you like to ski, pancakes or waffles? Like, to me, those are great questions because it's a good debate, sure. Pancakes or waffles. But what we get here really is the runoff of society, the people that make me afraid to go out at night. I don't read these in the dark. I don't read these when I need to leave my house without a weapon or that one of you. If I had one of you rolling, I would be like, right on, right on. But you know, it's just little me living in fear because of these. And Rocky, this first one is something I get a lot. And I don't know if you guys get these. And I bet you do, as you know, all celebrities get weird shit. But these are very unique. I saved this one because I get it a lot. But Rocky, I want you to read this and I tell you if I should take, you know, should I be taking action on this? Is this a good deal for me?
This is blowing my mind as I've opened up my email and I think that I've probably been phished somehow. And like my email is being sent off to somewhere in, I don't know, some terrible country that I'm worried that they're going to steal everything that I have in my bank account. That's the kind of thing that, so this comes from Ashmo Funds.
Yes.
First says, send me your WhatsApp number. So that's trusted right off the bat. So go ahead and send me your WhatsApp
number. He's coming in hot.
Yeah, well, it's not aggressive at all.
Not aggressive at all. It says, I'm looking for a rich, trusted person and more advanced in age. Compensate you or her with big money so that I will stand. No, it's good. So that I will stand on your behalf to enable you or her to receive the fund. I will help you compensate with me for her. If one can include your or her passport for ID to marry me for a while to build a relationship to see if we can work it out. Let me know if anyone's interested. First question, how old are you or her? I want you to get me written a signed letter of approval / endorsement to receive my beneficiary funds for the transfer / payment of my online draw and reward given to me. I can hold her funds as a deposit if you or her wants to fee me as well. And then receiver information, your full name, your age and marital status, your full residential address, your mobile telephone and fax numbers, your occupation, your company name and complete address, a copy of your international passport, ID cards, driver's license, receivers of banking info, your bank account name, number, SWIFT code, routing number, bank phone numbers, fax numbers, bank name, complete address, and any social security numbers you might need.
Yeah, I mean, is this a good deal, guys? Like, should I be married?
So jump on this one. Jump
do you
on
have
this
someone?
One.
Do you have someone filling all that out for you, or do we need to get you on it, or how quickly can we get this moving? This sounds like a great fucking deal.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure what the deal is, but I think you should go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you a funny story. When I had I was a porn agent for 4 years. I had my own agency. And one day I get a call from the police, which was very common. I was having to bail.
Sure.
Now, the girls would have a bail bondsman call me and go like, tell her if she wants me to show up for my gig, she has to bail me out of jail. Like, girl, you're $100 commission that you're never going to pay me. And I've got to put up my life in 10 grand. But this was the best one. I represented this girl, Victoria. She was sweet as pie. And she was so innocent and helpless. And she actually did one of these. She got the $100,000 check. She took it to the bank. And you know, when you take something like that to the bank, they don't talk to you. They call the police to come and arrest you. So this poor girl was like, I just thought this guy was sending me money and I was helping him out get over here. And I was like, oh, sweet Victoria. I'm like, yes, I'm going to bail you out. So Ashmill, get out of luck. I'm not giving you anything. Sadly, you can hire a PI, which a lot of stalkers do. They hire a private investigator and they find out everything they need to know about me. And then they come at me. This guy isn't even smart enough to spend the upfront money. Like, spend the upfront money, get the PI. I mean, right now, I've made a move that's off the grid. So I can't do anything with my place. Like, I have to get the Uber down the street. Everything's going to my business manager's address now. Like, I have to remember their zip code instead of mine. Like, I'm in this bubble right now. It's weird because you want to order shit, but you can't get it sent right to you. You got to get it sent to a P.O. box and go pick it up because people will know where you are. So Ashmill is out of luck. But, Doc, you got a good one coming for you right here. Let's go.
Oh, here we go. Yeah, guys, quit being so fucking creepy while I look at this. Here we go. All right. I got
real quick.
I got Christian here. Hey, Lisa, I've been a great fan for many years. I admire all the work you've been doing. Just an incredible entrepreneur. Your business IQ is extremely impressive. My question, I know this may seem like forever ago, but only your true fans will remember this. Can you bring back, I think is what he means, the Lisa Ann draft, ?
So this is going to be funny for all of you. Chris, you have no idea that I used to do this. There was a time on the road where I traveled with this huge security guy, right? So at that time, you know, I was single. I was living my wild life. So I had this draft. And guys could submit their photos and things about them. And then many times I hooked up with dudes out of the draft. And I got the idea one day on the road. I was on the treadmill in the little tiny hotel gym. And it was the NBA draft. And I was thinking, man, this is the greatest way to, like, you know, scout talent. Like, why don't I have a draft that? I went up to the hotel room, set up the Gmail. It was like Lisa Ann draft and Gmail or something. And it was flooded. And I would tell them to tell me in the subject matter what city you live in so that right away I could, like, folder them. Like, oh, I'm going to Greensboro, North Carolina. What do I got? What kind of?
Sure.
And my security guy would meet them. Like, they'd come to the club, we'd kind of screen them a bit. Then when my security guy would meet him at the front door and bring him to my hotel room and pretty much give him the story in the elevator that he'd be checking on me. And if they did anything wrong, that they would be handled, right? Yeah. So these guys were, like, already in fear. And it was flawless, but Christian, I'm past that stranger danger part.
Damn it.
I don't take these kinds of risks anymore. I'm actually in a relationship now as well. But it was a fun story to share for my listeners who do not remember that one day back in time ago, I was a lot wilder than the girl that's like, I need to be in bed by 9:30. You know, I got to be up early in the morning. So life has changed a lot. It is up to you now, Rocky. What does Greg have to say?
Oh, Greg.
Greg over here has to say, he asked Lisa Ann, says, so you left the adult industry the first time, embarked on a new career in radio and fantasy sports, then returned after a couple of years. Was there a pivotal moment where you concluded, yeah, I'm done? For instance, were you on set mid-performance thinking, what the F am I doing? Or was it more of a calculated thought process? Sorry if this is a repeat question. Cheers, Greg.
You know, I enjoyed this question because it wasn't, it was never a mid, believe me, when you're mid-scene and you're realizing that you're getting paid to have amazing sex, the last thing you want to do is go and get a job. You know what I mean? The any other job is going to require more homework, more research, more anything. So it really wasn't that. It was a culmination of things. When I started doing sports radio and I really met a different world of people and I took a break from the business, then I went back for a year. I just realized that kind of I'd outgrown a lot of the people and a lot of the circumstances and the desperation. You know, there was a point where I was doing a girl series, and this was in 2019. And it hit me that it was very hard to work with girls at this generation, this young generation, and not during the scene, look down at their skin and realize that they were cutters. And I don't know if you guys know. And so you wouldn't notice it because the girl would show up. She'd have her sweatpants on. She'd have her hoodie on. And I don't know if it was my age or whatever, but at that moment, I always wanted to stop the scene and be like, can we talk about this? Like,
we got to help you. Yeah.
What would make you cut your skin? And I've seen girls with cuts all up their arms. I took one girl to a plastic surgeon to see if there was anything he could do because she had them so bad in her thighs. Wow. And all of them after the scene, they told me it was something they started doing at 12, 13 years old. Like that's it's a very common thing with the younger generation. It just broke my heart to mark your skin like that.
That's sad, yeah.
And it's sad. And so I was realizing like, I'm outgrowing this because I can no longer see past all of these things that really burden me. And it would kind of take me away from the scene a moment where I'm, and I would ask the male performers, like, how do you deal with it? They're like, oh, every girl was a cutter. I'm like, well, does it make you think anything? Like, taking them to get help? They're like, well, as long as they're not open, you know, I don't really care. As long as there's no fresh scabs. And I'm like, no, it's sad for me. And so I think that's something that, we didn't do that. Our generation, and we got a cut. We were like, oh my gosh, I don't want to get that tan on this because I don't want a scar. Like, I'm going to be so careful with it. I don't want to mark on my body. So there were a lot of things, but I'm glad I went back because I reconnected with people in a different frame of mind. I collected the friends that I still talk to this day.
All right, we got a good question. Here we go.
I think we got a good question here.
All right. All right, let's see here. So this comes from David. Hi, Lisa. I'm David, 37 years old from France. Support you long time. Here's my question to you. What are you doing now for work? Are you married? What are your boobs size? Can you offer a day with you? Your hair is marvelous. I like you very much and can count me as your fan with pleasure. Kisses. That's it.
Oh my gosh, he did.
I don't know why he turned into Borat in the middle of it, but he just did.
I enjoyed that part.
David doesn't listen to my podcast. We really don't have to answer these questions, I'm sure of it. Because if he did, he'd know what I did for work. But I love that he threw in there, what is your boob size? Like,
he like snuck it in there with all these other compliments.
Yeah, and is he gonna like not offer the day with me if he doesn't like my boob size? Like, I'm wondering.
I think, that could be the pivotal moment. So you better answer this correctly, Lisa. I'm worried about you on this.
Yeah, I don't respond to these people, by the way. We only read them. Although, I'll bring it to you guys. I did start responding to a guy that asked me how many times I had sex in a week. And my producer, Chris, and I agreed that I should give him an arbitrary number. So I put 117 times. And he wrote back, you mean 16 times a day. And we have now gone back and forth with like four word emails back and forth. He's jolted. And I'm like, what do you mean? You couldn't have sex with me 16 times a day.
What's wrong with you?
Yeah, you can't keep up. All right, Rocky, back to you.
Okay, this comes from Riaz. He says, hi, I'm your big fan and I have a question. I want to know how many times need to make a 30 to 40 minutes porno video. You worked for a long time in this industry, so you know better. Please reply me.
The English, the decoder ring often has them. But these are guys that are just so curious and they're afraid. So what I realized these questions is
He doesn't last more than 30.
I think he's just doing, he's texting and driving probably. And he's
how, like, how many sex times do you for me?
But the question is good. 30 to 40.
Don't text and drive, guys.
To get 30 to 40 minutes of good footage, you shoot about an hour. But now the shoots are done on like a handheld. You guys know. You remember when you had to reshoot things all the time. Now the cameraman just follows you around handheld and everything. So a 30 to 40 minute scene, if it's shot straight through, can be done in 30 to 40 minutes.
Easy. There's your answer, nice. My man.
There's your answer. All right, Doc, you're up.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. So let's see. We have, it's a different Christian. What is the difference between making love on stage and love in private life? It must be more comfortable with cameras. It must be more difficult. That's it.
I love the accent. It brings so much, Dom. Okay, so
sensual.
Here's what I've learned about talent and what's very different to new talent when they first go on their first shoot. It's so quiet. And every guy will say he can do it, but when you get in a room where it's that quiet and everyone is staring at you and the lights have turned the room from 60 to 110 degrees in 10 seconds, no matter how much Viagra the guy takes, he's freaking out. So what's different definitely is you're on camera and you're having to open up to the camera. You're not able to be as intimate because that would close off the view to the camera, right? You guys know you're always opening up for the camera when you're shooting stuff. So you're talking side by side instead of face to face. At home, is just like at home. It's intimate. Right. You can have the lights on or off if you'd like. There's no guy chewing gum that you think you hear on the other side of the room. You know, all the weird things. Like one guy thinks he can like pick up his phone. You're like, I heard that, you know. So it's more comfortable at home. But on set, the thing was the fantasy of producing this, which is such a unique job. I can remember driving to set and thinking all the time in traffic, like, huh. Y'all sitting in traffic to go sit in a cubicle. I'm going to sit in traffic and go have sex. You know, that's what I always fun thoughts of just like how different my life was. So I really celebrated, just like you, the unique, right? We're in a different group of us.
You have to. Yeah.
It's very different. And also on set, Simon, with you guys traveling, it's a lot of fun. You have people that you love to see that you just laugh and carry on. Sure, when the camera's on, you're doing your job. But when the camera's not on, you are fucking off all day long.
Oh, yeah.
That's the best part of our lives, right? So we've answered his question. We've got another one over here. That's right. You're up, Rocky.
Okay, this comes from Otavio. I feel like Gallo should have read this one.
You should know this. He wrote the whole email in the subject line and the email
body. He did.
Of course he did.
He did. I thought that was a copy and paste mistake, but you're absolutely right. Otavio, you got to learn how to use email. So you're a Brazilian fan. Yeah, we'll get there. Hello, Lisa. I am an unconditional admirer of yours here in Brazil. Mm-hmm. I would love to receive an exclusive video of yours and even become more of a fan.
Cool.
Can you grant me that request?
Please.
That's a very simple question, Otavio.
That's it. No problems.
It's a hard no. You know why?
Come on. Whoa, Otavio. Come on, Lisa.
The internet is littered with pornography. Yeah. Let's face it. This guy can send me an email. He's so entitled. He thinks he should get something exclusive. I mean, fuck you, Otavio. No.
But I'm a big fan.
I will become more of a fan if you send me this personal video.
I'm not a big fan.
All right, Doc, you're up.
All right, here we go. Let's see here. All right. Aris, it looks like.
Yes.
Hello. I'm AG. I would really be very interested in meeting you. When will you be in NYC? Please let me know. AG.
Guys. Yeah, you're men.
He doesn't listen to the podcast much, huh?
When will I be in here?
She's off the grid. Undisclosed location, AG, you fucking weirdo.
Can I ask if you guys get emails from women asking to meet you privately?
No.
I don't think we get them like you get them.
So. No. You don't?
I get none.
That's such a bummer. I mean, it's not like you would meet them, but I get it. But does AG, like, do these guys think they're the only guy that wants to meet me? And
that is so awesome.
unlimited time in the day? Like how many hours? Oh, I'm going to meet you all. Yeah.
You know what? It's 1:30. I better see what AG's doing in New York City right now.
So AG, no. But let's talk about you two before we wrap up this mailbag segment. Tell me what you're both working on right now. I know there's constant fun chaos in your lives. I get to read weird emails. You get to actually go out and do shit.
Well, we just came off of Talkin' Shop-a-Mania 2, our self-produced wrestling parody pay-per-view, which featured a feature, if that works, of At The Real Gimmicks, the cartoon that all three of us are involved in with a host of other characters. But if you missed Talkin' Shop-a-Mania 2, it is still available on Fight TV via the Fight app on internet pay-per-view. So please check that out. It's just $14.99. We had a blast doing it, a big social media buzz from it. And yeah, I hope you guys loved it because we really want to make Talkin' Shop-a-Mania 3. What else we got going on?
I think it's still available on Dish Network and DirecTV and the cable providers as well. And there's a great cameo from a certain person who's on this podcast as well. So check that out and look for that special person. What else we got? We got our podcast that comes out every Sunday, Talkin' Shop. You can find it on Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts. So definitely check that out.
I love your podcast. Wow. And by the way, I love that your fans, like, because I've started following a ton of your fans on social media, they like pregame and drink. So not just watch you guys, but to listen to your podcast. Like, there's a whole moment going on when people are celebrating you. And I love the energy behind it because what you're doing is you're giving everybody this great escape in such a weird year. To your fans at those moments, the Talking Shop crew, it doesn't even seem like 2020 is any different to them. And that just makes me feel joy.
Well, thank you, Lisa. Like, I think that we consider ourselves a lifestyle podcast. I just don't know that we're good for your lifestyle, but we're a damn good time. So that's kind of where we're at. And if you do like to drink and pregame before, head over to tnsmania.com. We have all this alcohol stuff we're doing. The bourbon will be available very shortly. We're getting close on that. But we got our Houdette Sauvignon Blanc and our Hoot Blood Red Wine. They're available. I think it's shipping to over 30 states right now. TNSmania.com. All things Talkin' Shop, all things Rocky, Carl, Doc, live events, appearances, podcast materials, all that merchandise stuff over at TNSmania.com. So check that out, please. And thanks for following us.
Thank you so much for joining me. And I will be sure to make sure everybody is listening to your podcast. And this was great. The accent, I did not expect, Doc. You really threw me for a curve there.
Listen, it just came over. I don't know.
So what we learned today on the mailbag is, again, I'm saying no to everyone. And I'm sorry, Asheville Funds, but I don't think it's a good idea for me to send all of my personal information to an email.
Should we pool our personal information together and send it? See what kind of investment this opportunity.
Maybe it's a triple investment, guys.
Maybe.
Thank you all. Thank you so much for joining me. Thanks, Lisa. Thank you for spending some time with me and listening to my podcast. Also, thank you all for your emails, even the weird ones. I know you don't listen. I know what people do listen because they actually send good questions. One of the highlight questions was pancakes or waffles. I like that kind of shit. It's just fun. Keep those coming at AskLisaAnn@gmail.com. Don't forget, the Lisa Ann Experience is now part of the SiriusXM Podcast Network, which is so cool. SiriusXM has a free trial till December 1st. Take advantage and enjoy. And thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Lisa Ann Experience. SiriusXM Podcasts.